From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we begin today with Republican Congressman Mike Bost. He represents the 12th District, which covers roughly the southern third of Illinois, including Effingham and some of the outer St. Louis suburbs, all the way down to Carbondale and Caro. Bost easily won the general election this year, but he did have a close primary fight against former State Senator Darren Bailey, whom he defeated by 3 percentage points. And given that we're going to air in the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, I'll also mention that Mike Bost is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps and chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. In order to accommodate the congressman's schedule, we spoke earlier this morning. Congressman Bost, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Well, thank you. And to all the veterans that are listening, I want to say a happy Veterans Day to them. And thank you for recording early so that the time of the 11th and the 11th on the 11th that we can, because that is the time ever since the First World War, the Armistice Day.
Armistice Day. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. So it seems likely Republicans will have full control of the Congress and presidency for the first time since 2019. What is your personal number one agenda item?
Well, number one agenda is we're going to secure the border. We want to make sure that we are working very hard to curb inflation as quickly as possible, and we can do that by making sure that we get government regulations out of the way as quickly as possible. We'll be working with the president elect as soon as possible to implement the rules that will allow us to make sure that we become energy independent again, which will bring gas prices down, which will help make that inflation situation better. Then we also want to extend the tax cuts that we worked on early, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We've got to get that done by the end of this of 2025, or the middle income taxes will and lower income taxes will increase on the American people, as well as the danger of reverting back on what's known as the inheritance tax. That will revert back. So we got to do that. And then we've got to be working very, very hard to make sure that we stop China from buying American real estate and stealing our intellectual property. So there's a lot of things on the agenda. That's on the bigger picture.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there. So let's get into the details on some of that. So President-elect Trump has talked about deporting millions of immigrants, undocumented immigrants. When you think about the potential scale of this kind of action, maybe I think he said up to 15, maybe 20 million people. What are some of the logistical and legal challenges that Congress and local authorities are going to need to confront?
Well, first off, because they've been released and you don't know where they're in this United States at, just simply finding them. Now, understand this, that it will be organized. It'll be directed wisely. But if you came here illegally, that's the key word, illegally. This has nothing to do with those who have come legally and went through the process. Those who are returned can request the opportunity to come here legally. But also, you've got to remember that we had many, many, for everyone that was recorded, we've had many gotaways. We don't know how many are of those have criminal records. Or are terrorists because they come from every country in the world. So it's a very big logistical problem. But you can't just put your head in the sand and say, oh, then never mind, if you're here now, we're not going to worry about it. That's not going to be the case. We're going to actually have our immigration systems working to do what they're supposed to do and actually making sure bad players are removed from the nation as fast as possible. But if you came here illegally, then the key word, you came here illegally.
How do you think this might affect the local economies and communities that rely on these people as workers, agriculture? Yeah.
The people that work in ag are not here illegally. That's what a lot of people don't realize. Everybody that we have in our communities that work, whether it's in the apple orchards or dairy farms in the northern part of my district and everything like that, they already follow the rule. The problem isn't those that are coming here under visa to work legally. The problem is those that are here illegally.
Do you favor ending temporary protected status, as we've heard from some, like Stephen Miller, for people from either Venezuela or maybe Ukraine even?
The protected status is if they seek. Here's the thing. Here's where this all got messed up. If you are seeking asylum, which we participate in that through the world organizations, but asylum you can only seek in the nation that is the closest free nation to the nation you're seeking asylum from. That's why Remain in Mexico was so important during the first Trump administration. So it is, in a case like that, you don't have any place that you can deport them to unless it's the first country that should have taken them in as they sought asylum in from a country which they were escaping from. So don't confuse the law and what the law actually says. So that each one of those cases would have to be weighed out, because the thing is, where are you going to send them? You're not going to send them back to a country that they were seeking asylum from, but you may have to have a talk with those countries that are closest to that country. For instance, you know, the same thing that happened whenever they were seeking asylum. You know, I've been over to visit Jordan, and they have a tremendous amount of refugees there still from the Lebanese War that followed the rules. They sought asylum to the first free nation that they could go into. And a lot of people in this United States spend a lot of time quoting things that they don't really understand what the rules are about. So when you start dealing with those that are come from a nation where they would have to seek asylum from, the only option is you either figure out a way to put them back to the closest facility, or you don't, but you don't send them back to the nation in which they came from.
President-elect Trump has talked a lot on the campaign trail about tariffs. He had imposed tariffs in the first Trump administration. The Nonpartisan Tax Foundation found that those cost the average American household $625 a year. This broader set of tariffs he's proposing now, estimates are, I've seen anywhere from $1,200 to $2,000 per household. Do you support these broad-based tariffs, knowing they could amount to an effective tax on families?
Let me tell you, no one understands a tariff and how it can be used in a proper way better than Trump. And I can give you an example of that. So when he started imposing tariffs, he actually used Article 232 under the powers of the Commerce Commission, basically on China, and understand what this does. You can use 232 through the rules that have been passed by legislation in like I said, through Commerce Commission under the recommendation, if it negatively affects and endangers homeland security. And what happened is we got China that is real bad about dumping steel. And when I say dumping, what they do is they overburden the market, and then they drive U.S. Companies out by overburdening the market and overflooding the market. And we were down to the point before Trump came in during the Obama administration where we only had one company left that would print or that would make the cable that we use in every transformer in this United States and around the world. And it was all being made in China. China was also dumping in to the point that we lost 3,000 jobs back then in Granite City. Trump came in, implemented 232, wisely directed that tariff into place, and 3,000 jobs came back, and the steel industry came back in the United States. Now, let me tell you that he is very wise in knowing how to do that, probably wiser than anybody else that has been, because he studied these issues. Using the tariff to make sure that we keep and bring jobs back to this United States, when the group that you were talking about did the calculating. I think it's amazing to me because they also do calculating like what we get what's known as a CBO whenever we're calculating on the bill. They will show
Congressional
you
Budget
what
Office.
It's going to, yeah. What they will show you what it's costing you, but they won't give you credit for the benefits of the things that would happen. For instance, when you put the tariffs in place, what that quite often does is that allows a U.S. company to fire up very quickly and start replacing that item, whatever that item might be. But they're doing it with United States jobs and actually generating those revenues here in this United States. So the thing is, if you're trying to, they tried to calculate in a vacuum, automatic, that item is going to go up. because that item will not be replaced here. Well, if that item is replaced here, in the long run, it actually reduces the tax burden and actually adds to the GDP because you're putting people back to work. Whenever you saw what was happening just before COVID hit, the mass amount of job growth that was occurring because jobs were coming back from overseas, onshoring those items. And how much do you think we need to onshore as many items as we can after we live through COVID, when you see the fact that how many things we were dependent on other governments to try to help us in the United States when we were in that situation?
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Southern Illinois Republican Congressman Mike Bost, recorded this conversation earlier this morning. I want to shift topics now to reproductive health and abortion. Illinois has protected abortion rights at the state level, but there has been talk about pushing for a national abortion ban. Others have said no, but even using laws like the Comstock Act to limit access to medication, even in states where it's legal. Should Congress curtail abortion rights in states like Illinois, where voters and lawmakers have chosen to protect it?
I believe every life is precious, and that means supporting policies that protect unborn and give families meaningful opportunities and to conceive. So let me tell you this. I was a big proponent of the overturning of Roe versus Wade so that it was returned back to the states. I do believe it's a state issue, and I believe that is to be dealt with through your state administration and your state legislature. I myself am very pro-life, always have been. And all my voters know that, but it is in the hands of the state, and that's where it should remain.
How would you vote on a bill, national abortion ban, yes or no?
I don't think it'll come up, and I believe it belongs in the states. And I think it's very difficult when we've argued all these years to say you want them back in the states to then all of a sudden say, no, we're going to vote to ban it. I think that's up to the states to make the decision. I wish my state was not as strong on it was, because the radical position is, in the state of Illinois, you can have a late-term abortion. That is a radical position.
1%, just to clarify, I'm seeing 1% of abortions are at 21 weeks or more, according to that.
That's
Kaiser
great, unless you're,
Family
Foundation. And you know what? That's great unless you're that child that's a 1%.
Our time is short. There's so many things I wanted to ask you about, but let me turn to this. More than 50 Illinois residents have been charged or convicted for their role in the attack on the Capitol building back in 2021. President Trump has suggested he would pardon them, even those prosecuted presumably for assaulting police officers and forcing you and your colleagues into lockdown. Should he follow through on that?
Well, he's going to have to make that decision. He has it within his power. But let me tell you this. I believe that there are certain people that were, you know, we've had some investigation into this, and there are some that if they committed crimes that were crimes and were able to get their court date. The problem is the people that are being held there, and they were not given a right to speedy trial. And the reason they're not given a right to speedy trial is because when you get to D.C. courts and you get a public defender from D.C., they're the worst possible attorney that you can give to anyone. And based on that, many of these people have had their rights waived for a speedy trial. Now, I do not believe anyone who was violent, destroyed property, everything like that, then they should be charged. But they should be charged correctly, and they should have a right to a speedy trial and a fair trial. Unfortunately,
should they not be pardoned? Should they not be pardoned?
That would be up to the president, not up to me. I believe anyone who has committed a crime should be punished for that crime. So you know that.
Do you think that, I don't know if we've talked about this since it happened, that former President Trump pardoned Rod Blagojevich for his crimes, and you voted twice to impeach Blagojevich.
Right.
Did you think he made the right call?
That is the one place where the president and I had a long conversation. When I heard he was going to do that, I had three conversations with him and explained to him why it was that I felt that Rod Blagojevich was guilty and why it was that he should not be pardoned. We had a long conversation, and the president told me At that time, he said, I will not pardon him unless I call you, because I did not know these things. And I said, because he thought he got a bad deal and everything like that, I explained to him in great detail. Then he gave me a call, as he promised, the day he announced that he was letting Rod Blagojevich out of jail. But don't be confused. He did not pardon Rod Blagojevich.
Commutation. Thank you for clarifying that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So what he did to say when he called to me, he said, I want to let you know I will not be pardoning Rod Blagojevich. I said, thank you, Mr. President. I know that's well within your power. He said, I will be letting him out. I said, well, I wish you wouldn't do that, but that is also well within your power. He said, I think he got too many years. Well, let me tell you this, that Rod Blagojevich, if you'll remember, if you know the case well, the judge statement whenever he dropped the gavel and gave the sentence is, we just put one governor from Illinois in jail. I don't know what it's going to take to get the message. And a crime that should have got 8 years, he slammed the gavel down and said, you get 16 years. So he served 8.
Yeah, Ryan got a much lighter sentence, obviously. All right. Mike Bost, Congressman from Southern Illinois, thank you for your time. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Appreciate it.
More to come here on the 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us.